great. Birds, snakes, and aeroplanes. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I am a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Turn world to its own needs. Dummy, serve your own needs. Beat it up and not speak. Front, no strings. The matter, start to clatter with fear. Fight down. High wire in a fire. Rippers in a seven gauge. In a government for hire. In a combat site. Let the weapon come in a hurry with the fury speeding down.
From New York City, the survival capital of the world, this is Radio Doomsday Live. I'm your host, Mike Luckman. Glad you could join us on a very special edition of Radio Doomsday Live. We're just exactly 3 weeks to go to December 21st, 2012, the last date on the Mayan calendar that has everyone wondering just what's going to happen, if anything, on December 21st, 2012. Before I introduce tonight's guest, I want to mention something about what's going on here in New York City. Having just come through this ordeal called Hurricane Sandy, the storm of the century, there are still people, believe it or not, without lights. I was without lights for without power here for 5 days. It was really an incredible experience, and even I wasn't prepared for it, certainly not psychologically. We were told originally that it might be a couple of days in darkness, and it turned out to be a lot more than that. So you got to be prepared. And if the power grid ever goes down, I mean, this is just a tiny sample of the kind of disruption that there could be. Now, New York City and New York State officials are talking about implementing a flood defense system. New York City is totally, being an island about 14 miles long, is totally susceptible to more and more flooding. And as a matter of fact, one of my previous guests on this program, Anthony Carr, the world's most documented psychic, feels that New York City, that the floods are just going to keep on coming until the city has to be permanently evacuated. My guest tonight is Robert Vecino. I'm sure you've heard about Robert or seen him on TV. He's gotten an enormous amount of exposure. He's founder of the Vivos Underground Shelter Networks, and he has an enormous project that involves using a missile silo to house hundreds of people, perhaps thousands of people, to protect them from whatever disasters may be coming. I'd like to welcome Robert. I'd like to welcome you to the show and find out exactly how far along is this project.
Well, thank you, Mike. Glad to be with you and your audience. We're very far down the track at this point. Several shelters are completed and are fully stocked, fueled, and ready for December 21 or any date before or after that.
Now, Robert, let me just stop you on that one. December 21st, I've talked and I've had on my show everyone from the Mayan Pope from Guatemala to a number of other Mayan elders, both in the Yucatan in Mexico and in Guatemala, and they assure me that absolutely nothing is going to take place on December 21st on that precise date. Now, what might happen before and after that, that's another whole story. I mean, I do believe that we're living in the end times, as I assume that you feel that way too. But why is December 21st so important to you?
Well, it's not important to Vivos. It's kind of a metaphor, and that's what triggered our moving the project along about 5 years ago, was knowing that that date was coming, as well as just the current events. All leading to what seems to be a series of man-made and natural disasters or catastrophes. You know, I recently said and wrote a little article that the word doomsday is probably inappropriate. It should be doom time. And what I mean by that, similar to the word end times or the term.
I got you, yeah.
You know, it's not going to be a specific date. At least I don't think so. However, waiting for your show here, I was watching the History Channel and Ancient Aliens, and they ironically tonight have a piece on the Mayans and December 21. And, you know, every time I watch, I learn a little more. And what I learned tonight was their calendar was so accurate that it's actually more accurate than the atomic clock that takes time out to the fourth decimal point. And in fact, scientists believe that it may be more accurate than ours. And that was, you know, what, 500 years ago when that was first created, or 2,000 years ago. You know, their long count calendar goes back to 3,100 years before Christ was the start, and the end date is December 21. So for the people, the other guests that you've had on that say nothing will happen, you know, my hat's off to them, but not because they know, but because they're making a prediction. And therefore, you know, either they're psychic or they have a different crystal ball than I do. My crystal ball says it can happen, not necessarily that it will. And knowing
there's always some environmental disaster happening practically on any given day.
Well, I don't think we're talking about an environmental disaster, you know, like you just had in New York. I think we're talking about something epic. It could be, and I truly believe it's going to be from the heavens. What exactly, you know, is that? You know, I don't know, but I can tell you that we're not the only ones that are prepared for this. That the U.S. government, the Russian and the Chinese government have equally prepared deep underground bunkers for thousands of people, except you and me. It's really for the government elite and very high-ranking officials. Not even, you know, your major colonel level. It's for generals and above. And we've had many verifications from many military sources and government sources that these do exist, and they're fully prepared and ready to go.
You mentioned this kind of a cataclysmic event. I have an idea of what it might very well be. I don't know whether you're a believer in Planet X or Nibiru, and I knew Zechariah Sitchin quite well, the author of the books that popularized the subject. And I also work with Tom Van Flandern, who was the chief astronomer at the U.S. Naval Observatory, who many, many years ago made the government's initial announcement about the finding of Planet X. What's very interesting is that the third secret of Fatima, some people know about the existence of the third secret of Fatima, some people don't. If you're Catholic, you're more apt to know about the controversy. The third secret of Fatima has never been disclosed to the public, even though it was supposed to be disclosed. And that, I have found that that has to do with an object coming from space, a comet-like object, possibly a planet, possibly Planet X. In the Book of Revelation, they refer to it as as Wormwood. Take your pick. Nostradamus had his name for it. The Babylonians, the Egyptians, and Sumerians, and all these cultures had their own name for it. But it all seems to come to, they all seem to be talking about the very same thing. And what this had to do with is this object from space, or this planet or comet coming from space, essentially causing a flood of biblical proportions, which, according to Pope John Paul II, who did reveal it to a small group of pilgrims once in an indirect sort of way, suggested very, very strongly that within a matter of just seconds or minutes, that millions of people and a lot more could just be totally wiped off the planet.
Yeah, I think the quote was from the Pope, what good would it do to tell the world that the oceans are going to rise and millions of people are going to die?
Yeah, well, what good do you think? I mean, is that something that the Catholic Church should make an announcement about?
Well, you know, think about it. If they were to make an announcement right now, and let's say it was on your show or wherever, what would happen to the world? I mean, if it was a convincing announcement with great authority that you knew was for real, be it Obama, the Pope, whoever's going to make that announcement, you know, once that's made and people realize, oh, my God, it's true, and this is going to happen whatever on whatever date, that the end will be here, and they don't have a solution because they cannot accommodate, you know, 7 billion people in shelters. So what would happen to the world if they did? Think about it. You'd have instant meltdown, instant chaos. The remaining days would be hell on earth. And so I think they know that, and they're really not going to tell you. You're not going to hear from the government. You know, a lot of people say, well, I haven't heard this on CNN or Fox. Well, don't expect to. You're not going to hear it until it can no longer be hidden, until you look up in the sky and it's in your face, and so on. In fact, you know, I've heard from some high-ranking generals in the U.S. military that December 21 is when it will reveal itself.
Will reveal itself. When it will be able to be seen by the naked eye, Robert?
Correct. That's what I. That's my understanding. And that was as recent as just a few days ago. We had an unusual military person contact us. He was in the he's in the Army, and he's a mid-ranking officer, and he's trying to get into Vivos, and he said he was directed by a general. I won't tell you what base he's at, but it's near Colorado, and that they had toured, the general toured this officer through NORAD, which has pretty much been mothballed from the its original purpose, but it's still there. It's still a shelter, and it can still accommodate an awful lot of people. So it's fully outfitted and ready to go. Well, anyways, recently they were touring that shelter, and the general looked at him and said, you understand that you need to be underground to survive what's coming. And the guy had a chill up his back, and he said, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it's coming. We're prepared. Unfortunately, you won't be accommodated at this shelter. So the and then, which was kind of flattering, and I took it very nicely, that the general referred to Vivos. He said, Vivos is the only other solution for you. Get yourself into Vivos. So he contacted us, and we're making arrangements to get him in. But more important to me was the validation and the verification that this that the government, and that was pretty direct. I mean, we're one step away from a very high-ranking general making that statement. And we've heard from many other people that are on the list that are getting into these shelters. We've heard from the elite. We know other manufacturers of shelters. I can tell you that the elite, and I'm referring to the mega wealthy, maybe the upper one-tenth of 1%, as well as many Hollywood movie stars and so on, they are preparing. They have shelters. They're not making big news about it, other than Tom Cruise built one 4 or 5 years ago in Telluride under his home. That, you know, $10 million was the price tag that I heard. But, you know, that's great for the elite, and it's great for the government that they have a solution. But the rest of us, you and me and the average person listening to your show, you know, they're not on those lists, and they're not in those ranks. They're not going to be able to afford that. So that's where I came up with the concept of Vivos, and quite frankly, it's not jumping on a bandwagon. My bandwagon started in 1980. That's when I first had the vision and the inspiration that I needed to do this. Well before the Mayan calendar was popularized, I had no idea what the Mayan calendar was. I was brought up Catholic. I was in my young 20s at the time, not very religious. Believer in God, I would say I was more spiritual than I was religious. And I had this very, very strong inspiration that I needed to prepare to build a shelter for 1,000 people deep underground, fully outfitted for long term, for at least a year, for what was coming. And it was profound and it was scary. You know, that what was coming, there was something that was going to become an extinction event on the Earth again for the now supposedly the fifth time.
How much time, Robert, do you think we would have from the time that, let's say, if the general was right and we're able to see Planet X or whatever, some object from space on December 21st? How much time would we have then, do you think?
All right, well, once again, you're looking for a date and, you know, doom's day. Remember the term I used a minute ago? As doom's time. And the reason is it's probably not a good idea to put a timestamp on it, but I will say that the other information we got from the general that he told this officer is that the events were going to start in March of 2013 and run through June. And he was referring to it as solar coronal mass ejections, which is what Major Ed Daines has predicted, the kill shot. Right. And others, and NASA admits we're coming up on the zenith of the solar maximum, which will be in 2013. They've put out warnings to their employees. There's an awful lot of breadcrumbs that lead to the same end, which is the sun's going to go crazy. Now, whether that's triggered by Nibiru and its interaction electrically with our universe or our solar system, or is it a comet or an asteroid that's going to trigger it? Or is it just independent of all that? It's going to happen at the same time that maybe an asteroid's coming in, at the same time that we have some Earth changes, which are, have already started.
Robert, you currently live in a villa in Del Mar, California. And I imagine that, how is the weather out there tonight?
Well, the weather out here is consistently 72 degrees. It's room temperature outside and indoor.
There had been reports of an atmospheric river, which is an unusual atmospheric climatic occurrence, where as much as a foot of water could come down in one day out there on the Pacific coast around the California area.
We've had that in the past. It's a little early in the season for that to happen, but I understand that the northwest up in the Oregon-Seattle area, maybe Northern California, they are forecasting 10 inches of rain. It is ironic you should bring that up. Today was the first cloudy day we've had in months, and a little bit of drizzle, and they're forecasting rain for the next 4 days. But be that as it may... We are seeing weather anomalies all over the world, extreme, and I think it's just the tip of the iceberg. We're going to see atmospheric and physical Earth changes, maybe independent or perhaps tied in to this event. Let me give your audience a little more insight, and I'm not that familiar with what you normally and how much knowledge you have and how much you've already passed on, but so forgive me for redundancy here. At the risk of being redundant.
This is all stuff we talk about all the time.
All right, well then, just further validation, but you know about 2012 AD 14, or DA 14, which is an asteroid 75 meters, coming in that'll originally was forecasted to be 100,000 miles away from the Earth on February 13th, 2013. NASA got better readings on it, and they shortened that distance to under 10,000 miles, and then they shortened it to under 2,000 miles, and now they're not saying. And in fact, there is no tracking online anymore, meaning that object is very likely going to hit the Earth around February 13th, and so we're just a few months away. Zoom ahead a little bit to June 1st, and Courtney Brown with the Farsight Institute, which is doing remote viewing. He had 80 different remote viewers do a double or triple blind study back in 2008, I think it was. And they looked into the future at a certain date, and that date was June 1, 2013. And they were tasked with, tell us what you see, but it was so blind, they didn't say see where, they didn't see what, or they didn't say, see when. And ironically, all of the remote viewers came back with similar drawings and description of what they saw, and that was that every coastal city that they were tasked to look at, some were Japan, some were Los Angeles, New York, Sydney, and so on, but every coastal city that they were looking at was totally wiped out. That they were underwater and so on. So that suggests some mega tsunami or some major change in the level of the ocean, either from a landmass rising from underneath, displacing the water, or I don't think you're going to see a sudden meltdown that's going to cause it. But if that's the case, then okay, the asteroid that is inbound, you could say, so what? Big deal. 75 meters, about the size of a football field. Well, that's about the same size as the one that hit Tunguska in Russia in the early 1900s and wiped out 400 square miles. So if it hits above land, it's probably a blessing, because if it hits the ocean, which it's more likely to do, you're going to have a global tsunami, and that may be the reason for the event. Maybe it has something to do with the solar storms. The truth is, I'm intuitive, but I'm not psychic. And I'm not going to sit here as a researcher or a scientist and say it is going to happen or it isn't going to happen. But I am going to say there's an awful lot of others that have already made these predictions, from the Bible to the Hopi to the Mayans to Edgar Cayce and so on. Enough so, plus my own inspiration, that anybody that is not now preparing is a bigger gambler and has worse odds than trying to win yesterday's big lottery.
Why would it cost for a family of four to be able to have access to one of your underground shelters?
Well, the community shelters, which are the biggest ones, they can accommodate from 100 people to 1,000 people. They vary in price depending on the size, but the ones that we have remaining with space for accommodation are $50,000 for an adult and $35,000 for their accompanied child, child under 16. And, you know, that is expensive, but in perspective, I can tell you that the food alone, the fuel and the clothing per person runs us in the $6,000-$7,000 range, much less the shelter. And in fact, the smallest shelter we have has a replacement value of $20 million. That one is
now
gonna
where,
that
where,
one
Robert, has you know, the one that you got all this publicity on, there was one was in the Midwest, I believe, that you purchased, that you were, you know, I guess was your main one or your first one. Is that where is that located? I know you're not.
Well, we have one in southern Indiana. Mm-hmm. All right. Far away from the Mississippi, and so should there be the division of the country with the new future map, which you may have talked about, you know, it's not in that flood zone. We have another in the Nebraska area. We have another one in the Rockies. We have one in Central Europe that is not yet available, meaning it's underway. That one is the big kahuna. That one is nearly a 500,000 square feet. It'll accommodate several thousand people. Plus, we're working on turning it into a true Noah's Ark, where it'll have animals and species from all over the world flown in at the last minute. Yes. It's big enough.
Think that you're a crackpot, Robert? That goes pretty far.
No. Well, why? Let me ask you this. Do you think that the government is crazy?
No, not at all. I don't know that they're making plans to save animals in that way.
Well, you don't know, but they are, and I'll let me get into that here for you. But, you know, they've spent billions and billions of dollars. You know, you've heard of black ops and money that's been unaccountable. That's where it's been going, and they've been doing this for 30 years. So they've been bunkering up and digging in for some reason. Now, they have insight because they have telescopes, they have NASA. They have the knowledge that we can only guess that they're not telling us, because they won't. But, you know, that said, you know, follow what they do in this case, not what they say. And what they're doing is they are bunkering up. So, do you consider them crazy, or do you consider them knowledgeable?
Yeah. I don't consider you crazy at all, by the way. I think that you're a leader in this in this field. And I'm wondering how many people have actually signed up for.
Well, we have over. Mike, we have over 25,000 applications worldwide. Yeah, worldwide, from Japan to China to you pick the country, every continent, every country, effectively. People, this is a global thing. This isn't an American thing and or a Mayan thing. It's truly global. People around the world are now starting to scurry, panic, and anxiously trying to find a solution if they can. The biggest problem we have with all those applications I mentioned, that, you know, it's like 99% of them cannot afford it. They, in fact, we tried to do a $10,000 shelter per person. They couldn't afford that. So the truth is they couldn't afford 500, which doesn't cover anywhere near our cost. I mean,
right.
You know, somebody said, "Well, Robert, aren't you kind of a modern day prophet?" I said, "No, I'm a nonprofit. I haven't made any money at this. You know, I've invested millions in it. I'm not taking advantage of people. I'm creating their fear. I'm resolving it. I'm giving them peace of mind, what's otherwise known as life assurance." And I can tell you, the people that have bought into Vivos and co-own their shelters now around the world, they are very well educated, very astute. I mean, doctors, lawyers, Wall Street people, private entrepreneurs and business people, some Hollywood people. These are people that have been, made it, and but they're not elite. They're the middle class, upper middle class. But the common denominator that I would tie all of these people together with is they all had, A, their own inspirations that they've had for 20, 30 years. So they've come to us and they're playing our song. They're telling us what we believe, what we've heard. And, it's uncanny. But the other is that these people are very well read. They listen to news. They listen to programs like yours. And they don't wait for the media or the government to tell them. They are able to connect the dots. And so, when they hear that the Middle East, this is going to happen or whatever, they see they envision the repercussions. They can envision the ripple effect of, oh, my God, if that happens, this will happen. Or Fukushima, or you pick the event. And whereas most people, their concern is getting the new mini iPad or the iPod or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Black Friday, let's all rush out and buy things we don't need or we're not even going to care about in 2 or 3
right.
months. So, that's the difference. These people are protectors of their family. They're instinctively able to know when it's time to put your guard up and be protective. And they're self-responsible, and that's the key. You got to be, don't expect somebody to come and save you or take care of you. There was, I'll give you an example. I don't know if you've ever used this on your show, but, 9/11, who were the people that survived? The people that used their own instincts and got out of the building.
Mm-hmm.
Who were the people that didn't survive? I mean, other than those that had no choice, they were above the flames. But the ones that went back to their desk because the security guard told them to, all right, a person of quasi-authority, and they listened to them, and they went back to their desk.
Yeah.
All right? Those people did not use their instincts, and that's the key. You got to use your instincts. And my gut told me 30 years ago, or my inspiration, it's coming. Get ready. Get prepared. We can't predict, but we can prepare.
How many feet above sea level are these underground shelters?
They vary. The highest one is about a mile in the Rockies.
And the lowest?
Quite frankly, well, the lowest is probably 1,800 feet. Quite frankly, but it's not so much the height. I mean, sure, there's a chance that, like in the movie 2012, the water's going to rise like Noah's time, and it's going to go to 11,000 feet. And if that's the case, guess what? We're all goners, because nobody can live and survive under a mile of water or 2 miles of water.
Does that mean that people, I hate to say this, but does that mean that in that sort of a circumstance that people would actually drown in your shelter?
Well, wait a minute. They're going to have a better chance of surviving than people that don't have a shelter. And are guaranteed to drown on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
So, you sit here and think, well, what about those poor people in the shelter? Don't worry about the people in Vivos. Our shelters are designed to be submerged under several hundred feet of water, but, very few things can handle the pressure. I mean, think about the Gulf oil platform and that disaster.
Right.
Look at the troubles they had just going down 1 mile, 5,000
mm-hmm.
plus feet, to deal with plugging that well. So, water pressure is tremendous, and I can tell you that Vivos is built and designed, and we have water gates and doors that are able to handle several hundred feet of submersion for a brief period of time, and brief meaning a week to 10 days. So the thought is that whatever that water is will come and it'll go in the form of a tsunami or something.
When the doors close, At what point do you close the doors, and at what point do you open them? And is it true that no one's going to be able to get in except the people who are there already?
We're going to close them at the last possible moment. I mean, the answer is real simple, and that is when danger is so imminent that if we don't, then the shelter is compromised and everybody in it. And once that door is sealed in what we call condition red, we won't open it no matter who's on the other side. And nobody on the other side is going to get in, because that thing is, I mean, you could shoot ballistics at it and you're not going to get through it. It's heavy, thick, armor-plated. Our shelters were designed to withstand a 20-megaton nuclear blast within 2 miles. So, that's not a direct nuclear hit, because a direct nuclear hit will create a crater of perhaps as big as 1,000 feet in diameter and blow us right out of the ground. But we're in locations, we're not a target. But we can withstand the forces of nature, force 10 earthquakes in succession, perhaps the shock wave from an asteroid, radiation fallout, effectively everything. These shelters are the real deal, and that's why, it seems the general made recent comment, hey, go to Vivas, because we are the only viable source. There's a lot of companies out there right now building shelters out of shipping containers, out of corrugated drain pipe, 8 and 10 feet in diameter. And the problem is those things aren't going to survive. They're not engineered. The companies that manufacture the drain pipe, they shudder when they hear that people are getting in their pipe and sealing themselves in and going to try and survive, because at best it's a storm shelter, meaning it might survive a hurricane or a tornado, but not the forces, the epic biblical forces that we're building for.
What did somebody do who can't be, who's claustrophobic?
You don't have any sense of claustrophobia inside. If you've ever been in a hotel lobby where perhaps they don't have windows, or in the lounge area, or if you've been in a casino in Vegas, the last thing on your mind is windows. Trust me, I've been in shelters for 3 days and I don't have any claustrophobic. These places are huge. They have 20-foot high ceilings. The smallest shelter is 10,000 feet.
We're talking about being there though for a whole year, perhaps up to a year.
It doesn't matter. There's a variety of rooms. There's a kitchen, lounge areas, dining rooms, theater, hair salon, exercise gyms, pet areas, classrooms, private bedrooms, hydroponics areas, hospital, a full clinic, that vary in size by the size of the shelter. So it's kind of like being on a cruise ship, an underground cruise ship. But again, if you're claustrophobic, which everybody that's come in has wondered, oh, I don't think I'm going to like it in here. And after about 10 minutes, I say, so how do you feel? And they say, fine, it feels great. These are not gray battleships or like a submarine. Our decorators have designed them to be as warm and cozy and friendly as maybe a Starbucks, if you will, with all the variety of colors. And psychologically, they're really comfortable. We've designed them with security first, but comfort second, because for that exact reason, what good is it if you're psychologically not going to be able to handle shelterization for a long term?
How many of these amenities are actually in place at this particular time?
They all are. These shelters are complete. They are effectively four-star hotels, and they're done. In fact, we had a recent crew in from the television show Decoded, a show that I respect, so we made a very rare exception, because right now I've got over 500 different media outlets from all over the world. Every major television network in the nation or in the world wants into Vivas. They want to do live broadcast or live interviews, as you can imagine, but we won't bring them in. A, we don't have the time for it, and B, we cannot run the risk of compromising a single shelter. If we do, and everybody in television land says, oh, yeah, I know where it is now, and at the moment of truth, they're all going to show up at the gate. Not that we can't defend ourselves, because we are prepared for that, but it creates an ugly situation, so we don't want to ever have to face it, so the less that know, the better. But Dakota did come. We let him in after, geez, it must have taken 3 months to negotiate the confidentiality agreements and so on. We brought him in a black, blacked-out windowed van. They drove for about 2 hours in this blacked-out van from the airport to the site. Mm-hmm. We drove them in circles and back and forth, and there was a lot of deception going on. But anyways, at the end of the day, we got them there. They went immediately inside. They never were on the surface. Well, they got a peek. They got out of the vehicle. And they went downstairs. They were down there for 48 hours, spent the night. They interviewed a lot of interviews before and after. And the next morning, I think the most flattering thing was the host came out and got on the surface and did a little stand-up. And he said, you know, I thought I was going to be claustrophobic. I wasn't. It was as comfortable as any hotel I've ever stayed in. It was really nice. And he said the most convincing thing was he sat there for 24 hours and tried to figure out what we didn't do. What did we not do right, or we could have done better, or where did we slip up and forgot something? And he said he couldn't. He couldn't come up with a single thing. That's how well-designed, engineered, and built these places are.
When is this story going to be aired?
Well, it was supposed to be aired in the next week, but the last I heard, they may be doing it the week of the 21st of December, mm-hmm. to which I said, well, geez, guys, if you're trying to get the word out, aren't you cutting it kind of close? So, you know, assuming something's going to happen. And again, we don't know, but I can tell you that myself and our the members that are owners of their shelters will be in their shelter on December 21, just in case.
Now, say that again. I'm not sure I heard you correctly.
We are going to be in shelter on December 21.
Who is we?
Everybody who has a pass, an ownership right to go to a shelter. So Vivo's members.
Everyone's going to be in a shelter on December
21. Hopefully they'll all make it there. Some are saying, I don't know, I want to wait. Most of them. Others, some are saying, well, I don't want to interfere with Christmas. And I'm going, huh? You paid how much? For your right to go to Vivos, and that's the key date, and you're not sure. Well, I want to wait and see what the if there's any signal signs or anything. So they're on short leash and short notice, but others are already packed and ready to go. So they'll be arriving about a week before, and if everything is fine and there's no problem, they'll leave the next day or a couple days thereafter and head back to their homes for Christmas. But we're still on alert, and we'll still be, ready to return. You know, the thing about Vivos is, since we don't know when, we may go there a dozen times in our lifetime, each time expecting that's the event. It's, I was talking to a news crew once, and they said, well, how do you know when it's time to go to shelter? And just as they asked that question, some very loud fire engines went down the street. And we had to stop because it was so noisy and wait for them to pass. And I said, it's kind of like those fire engines. And they said, what do you mean? And I said, well, those firemen, when they get the call, they don't say, oh, it's Mrs. Jones' house. It's another false alarm. She calls us once a week. Let's not even go this time. They don't know if it's the right time or not. But, so what do? They go. They turn their sirens on and they go as fast as they can and they go there. And the same thing with Vivos. We don't know, or unless we do know for certain that an asteroid or a planet X or whatever is coming, and there's a certain date when the events are going to happen, then, of course, we'll be there in advance. But otherwise, we use our instincts, we collect the dots, we see what's going on in the news and the world, and, we all head to shelter when we think it's right. So, in that regard, they're free to go. The members and the owners of their shelters, they own their shelter. Along with 100 people or perhaps the bigger one, 1,000 people. And so they all have keys. But interesting on that point is that they no one key opens the shelter. We have a redundant key system, just similar to the missile silos, where it takes two or more members to with a red key and a blue key to turn the keys at the exact same time to get those doors to open.
Okay. Robert, are you going to be living in one of those shelters with your family?
Living in? you know, hopefully
well, I mean,
not,
point,
if necessary,
yes. Yeah. Really bad.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm, you know, I built it for myself and my family, but as well as other families, you know, so to not save my own butt and my family's, would be ludicrous. So yeah, we absolutely will be going there. My bedroom and my bedroom suite and the key shelter that I want to go to is, it's fully furnished. It's ready to go. Let me give you a key. I live in a 7,000 square foot villa in Del Mar near San Diego, overlooking the ocean and, you know, in Southern California. And that's not a brag, but it's a home that I've built and I designed 10 years ago. In fact, ironically, I broke ground. The bulldozers were here on 9/11. So, yeah, ironic date. You know, I'm thinking at the time, oh, my God, what did I get myself into? You know, I'm committed to doing this and the world's falling apart. Well, anyway, so I live a very comfortable lifestyle, which I've earned. You know, when I first came to California in my 20s, I was broke. I didn't have 2 cents in my pocket. And I've made it and lost it many times, but you know, this is a, you know, I'm living very well with a very nice home that, you know, I'll mention I've never worked for anybody in my life, and I've been working for the last 5 years. Now get this, are you ready? With no paycheck, I have not earned a dime on this project. So I'm investing millions. Yeah. How many people on your audience can say, other than the fact that they might be unemployed and collecting, that they have not had a paycheck in 5 years, nor have they asked for one, you know, and that's me. But anyways, as nice as this home is, between September of last year and September 1 of this year, Labor Day to Labor Day, I was only in my own bed, I think, 32 days out of the year. The rest of the time, I was in underground shelters, helping get them built, sleeping on the floor, I mean, literally on a concrete floor with an air mattress, as we get started in some of them. I like to be there. I like to oversee. I go from shelter to shelter, and because there's a lot of issues that take immediate, you know, seat of the pants, figuring out how do we fix this or do that. And but yet when they're done, I can tell you that they're as comfortable as my home.
Robert, I want to go back to the date of December 21st. The fact that to me it's remarkable that you're planning that you've invited the people who have a share in these underground facilities to actually go there on that particular date, it sort of implies that you think that something could happen on that date.
Well, you know what, Mike? The key word you just used was could. It could happen any day, any time. We don't know. And so, but we do know that that's a predicted date that's in stone, carved in literally in stone, that may have been set for very profound reasons that are well beyond anything we can imagine or would want to imagine as to how they picked that date. What did they know? What do they know about the universe and the solar system and the and possibly what were they told? Were they told by you know, outside forces, you know, i.e. you know, the gods that came down from the skies?
Yeah. But, you know,
at
these
the
King Mayan elders who have been on my program have said that categorically that they don't expect anything of a catastrophic nature to happen on that date, despite the rumors attached to that date.
I ask you, Mike, what do they base that on? That there's no absolute carved in stone, this is going to happen on this date, and that's how they know? Okay.
It's mostly oral tradition passed down. So it's not scientific or anything like that, but still, if anyone would know or should know what's going to happen on a particular date, particularly that date, it would be the Mayans. I mean, they have huge councils of Mayan elders, and I've spoken to and interviewed the very key guys at the top, and they have told me without question that they don't expect anything of an untoward nature to happen on that date.
Well, let's put it this way. Let's hope it doesn't. But I can tell you that we are in some very dangerous times.
Oh, we totally agree, yeah.
What may, in fact, be the end times. And with everything we've done and the efforts that we've made at Vivos to get these shelters ready, do you think I'm going to sit here and tell my members, sorry, you can't go there on December 21? No, we're opening the doors, we're activating, and we're going to hope for the best, and everybody goes home and has a nice Christmas. Mm-hmm. But if not, we're there. We're ready. And being there, by the way, they become very nice meet and greet get-togethers. Everybody, there's lots to talk about. Time goes very quickly when everybody's there. And we do some strategic planning and training and security measures and things like that. But that said, I don't know if it's December 21, Mike. I'll continue to repeat that, but I know that there's a chance it could. So because of the keenness of that date, you know, that I am going to be there. But I'm more concerned about, you know, thereafter. You know, let's look at June 1 and, you know, that Courtney Brown's people, the remote viewers, see the world being destroyed. The general said starting in March, we're going to have the solar flares. NASA tells you we're going to have the solar flares. Ed Dames tells you we're going to have the kill shots. And, you know, as much as you know, we all respect the Mayan elders, you know, what do they know about a kill shot, or what do they know about, you know, some of the stuff?
NASA scientists have repeatedly stated that there's a possibility the power grid could go down as a result of a solar flare, and they've obviously been getting stronger.
Well, in fact, Mike, sorry to interrupt you. In fact, the general said it'll be 100 times greater than the Carrington event, which was 1859,
yeah,
where it took out the telegraph system at the time, which was the only wire that was running across the land. So I think we're looking at some severe devastation, and whether it's Fatima, the third secret, or whatever source of profound prophecy or intervention and insight that was handed down or brought from the heavens or, you know, from the divine to the, you know, to the aliens, you know, who knows? I'm just telling you that there's an awful lot of things all pointing to the same time. And so anybody that sits back and laughs or says, you know, this is crazy, you know, I wish them luck, but you know what they're doing is they're gambling with their life. You know, now,
yeah,
maybe
well,
it's because
being here
they don't
in New York, having just come out of Hurricane Sandy, there are lots of people who feel very differently about the kinds of things that you and I have been talking about.
And Sandy was just a small microcosm of what may come. I mean, that was the, you know, storm of your century. But, you know, we didn't feel it in California. And so a lot of the country is oblivious to, you know, oh me, oh my, you know, that's too bad for New Yorkers. And that's about it, you know, and they really aren't sensitive to it or feeling it. But when it's global or, you know, on a hemisphere or the continent, you're going to feel it. And the government's not going to be there to be able to help you. I mean, they could hardly keep up with Sandy or Katrina.
Are people going to shareholders going to be able to bring their personal some of their personal possessions? Because from reading your website, you get the impression, I mean, that you guys are providing everything, food and clothing and the works. And can people wear their normal clothing? Can they have other clothing with them? Can they have any personal possessions with them? Is there room for that?
Yeah, good questions. We provide everything, so all they have to do technically is arrive with the shirt on their back, and hopefully something down below too. But be that as it may, they are allowed to bring effectively two very large suitcases full. I forgot what the cubic footage is. Let me just think it out. It's 2 by 6 by 2, so it's 4 times 6, 24 cubic feet of storage area, and then there's another little storage area. So they're not bringing their heirlooms, all right?
Right.
But
they may
bring photographs and jewelry, and they, you know, we encourage them to bring their guns and ammo if they're legal, frankly, because we don't provide any guns or ammo. We're not a militia. But, you know, if it's a legal weapon and you've got a license for it, you're entitled to bring it. So please do.
What type of security are you providing there?
Oh, it's intense. Let me just say this, that once the shelter's sealed, nobody's going to get in. Think of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Mm-hmm.
You will go through a myriad of things that will happen to you as you try to get in. You'll never even get to the door, I can promise you. But if you do, how are you going to open that door? You know, unless you got some very high strength explosives and experience. You know, unless you're military, you're not getting in. And then the other thing I've heard people say, well, we're going to block your air shafts, and the answer to that is really, I don't think so. And you know, we've got measures there as well. But we also have some, those are all offensive, but we also have some very, or defensive, we also have some very strong offensive measures, which I can't
what
tell you.
What
do
the governments of the United States government and other governments, how do they feel toward what you're doing? Are they concerned that you might be creating unnecessary panic in the population? What have you heard on that front?
Well, we're a fly on the wall. We're just a speck. We're not creating anything. We're just resolving people's fears. You know, the fear is created by the world's events, by the government itself, what's going on in Washington. And if you watch any mainstream news, I mean, you know, what's their slogan? If it bleeds, it leads. And you know, the stuff is out there. And you know, I didn't write the Bible, and you know, that's been around for 2,000 years, talking about revelations and what's coming. So, and the Mayans and so on. So, you know, we're not creating a fear, so the government's not looking at us for that reason. And from what I can gather, and we've got friends at the FBI that we've talked with, and in a very friendly way, by the way, as well as what we get back from those in Washington, in the executive level, as well as what we hear from, you know, the forces, the military, I think they admire us. I think they like what we're doing. You know, good for you. Let's hope you guys survive. They're not against people surviving. They just can't provide you and the average, every one of your listeners here, a space and a solution because they don't have the funds. It's impossible to accommodate, you know, America's population, much less the world's population.
Now you said that a large percentage of the individuals that you've heard from, tens of thousands of people worldwide, were interested in coming into your shelters, that most of them, the vast majority, can't afford it. Is there any kind of financing available?
Yes, we do offer financing, and there is a down payment requirement. But, yeah, we can stretch payments out for, you know, from anywhere from a year to 5 years.
What would be a typical down payment for a family of four?
It's like 30%, and it depends on their credit. So it's just like anything else. You want to buy something, you know, it's a variable there. But
right.
We customize it to fit the, you know, the party. Effectively, we're doing everything we can to get people in other than making it free. But if we got another minute or two, let me enlighten you to something else we're working on. We are working on a large shelter of 1,000 people where, in fact, it will be free to those 1,000 people. And in other words, it's underwritten. It's there's some philanthropists behind it. And this one's a little different. This one, we're going to go out and seek the best of the best people in the world. And what does that mean? Does that mean they're Aryan Nation? No. So it'll be all races, all religions, all ages, from young to old. And but it does mean the best, not the worst. We're not going to go out and pick up the dredges of society. But those that will have the greatest benefit to the future, if there is a new rebuilding of the earth or a new genesis. And so, and the reason we're doing that is, you know, from the beginning I said, wait a minute, is this just for these people that can afford it? You know, is that what I was inspired to do? Or do we in fact have a duty and a responsibility to try and save the best of the human race? You know, we don't know what the government's efforts are. And by the way, earlier in the discussion here, you mentioned what else is being done. Another thing that was done recently, and you probably have talked about, is the Doomsday Seed Vault in Norway, which was built by the Norwegian government and
yes.
Bill Gates and many other philanthropists. You know, so there they are storing an abundance of seeds from every biological species on the planet. All right. Now, did you think that was crazy, or did the media think it was crazy? No. You know, when you think about saving seeds, or when you think about saving animals, gamete cells, sperm, ovum, or DNA, you know, there's another university, by the way, working on that. Do we give much thought to it? Do we care? When you hear about the government's got underground bunkers, which they always have, but now they've got some very big ones, do we pay much attention to it? And the answer is no. But when you hear about a private venture that is doing it and doing it for anybody to get in, well, now we got a problem with it. And the problem is, why should they get in and I don't get in? Unfortunately, that's true. I feel for those people, but not everybody gets a brand new midsize, you know, luxury car this year, you know, a BMW or Mercedes or whatever. You know, well, unfortunately, the world is unfair in that regard, or it is fair. You know, you yield what you reap what you put out. And so, you know, if you're not out there working and earning as I have and others have, then, you know, unfortunately, what is luck? Luck is when opportunity meets preparedness. So,
okay, I've got one more question for you in the remaining minute or two that we have. Tell us something about the Cryo Vault operation that you have planned.
Well, as another means of accommodating people, and in this case where we can't accommodate them physically, we are we do have a Cryo Vault where they can send in DNA samples or actual gamete cells, sperm and eggs that are frozen in cryogenic vaults of liquid nitrogen, at deep freeze levels, and they'll be stored there indefinitely, and with the hope that when we come out, we'll be able to use them.
And how much did that cost people to have that sperm or ova stored?
It's just a few $100, and so it's an opportunity for you to keep your family lineage going effectively. It'll give you some satisfaction. Think of it this way. If I told you I was building a spaceship that was going to leave the Earth just in time before the Earth blew up, and that spaceship was going to another planet that, you know, we humans could survive on, and we're going to populate that planet, and you were given the honor of either being on the ship physically or sending some of your DNA or gamete cells along the way, how would you feel about that? And so effectively, that's what Vivos is. It's a spaceship. It's just not leaving the Earth. It's underneath the Earth. It's going inside the Earth. As of today,
sounds like a science fiction movie in a way.
Well, it may sound that way, and the word even Vivos, you know, which came to me sitting having a coffee one day, it means to live. And I got the vision for this word without knowing Latin. I had no idea what it meant. I said, that's it. We're going to call it Vivos. And then I went and looked it up, and it means to live.
Okay,
so,
ladies and gentlemen,
my
special guest tonight has been Robert Vecino, founder of the Vivos Underground Shelter Networks. And, Robert, what is your email address?
Well, I won't give that out, but I can tell you our domain is...
I'm sorry, not your email address, your URL for the...
It's terravivos.com. Terra, like an earth, T-E-R-R-A, Vivos, all one word, V-I-V-O-S.com, which, again, translates in Latin to earth, to live. When you get to Terra, if you can't remember that, just search Vivos on Google, and it's everywhere. Last time I searched Google, I had 8.5 million hits on Vivos. So it's out there. It's huge. They're talking about it.
I want to thank you, Robert Vecino. This is Mike Luckman for Radio Doomsday Live, signing off.
Thank you, Mike. Pleasure to be with you.